Yet again, humanity is in the X-Men's debt.
Cyclops still won't let me fly the jet.
The last will and testament of Charles Francis.
He's here!
Apocalypse.
To me, my X-Men. Hello, my friends. It is I, Rich Filiberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet. Very excited to be back with you again for another week of X-Men 97. Episode 4 has dropped, a two-parter, Motendo and Life Death Part 1. I misspoke. My expectations got carried away from me to the clouds with them, like Storm's lost powers. I really thought we were getting a double episode drop this week. So for anybody whose expectations I set up to fail, sorry. My bad. I, of course, am not alone. I am joined by a man who knows just how to sugar my coffee and who I suspect would gladly spend their evening in a bar of childish amusements for my birthday, the one and only Kevin Mahadeo. Kevin, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I am so good. And I absolutely would spend your birthday and any birthday or any day in a bar arcade, especially. Like, this is, it's so funny because, like, bar arcades are a thing. Like, I don't know about where you're at, but like in New York, 10 years ago, it started to come up. And I don't hear about them much here, not that I'm back in New York, but when I was in LA for a good 7 years, it was a growing market. There were so many that popped up. Like there was one down the street called, I think it was called Player One. There was 8-Bit. There was several places and they were all awesome. And you know what game they had there, Rich? The X-Men arcade game, which this episode literally pulls from. It's so cool. Like, it was just such a throwback to one of my favorite arcade games of all time. Absolutely, the X-Men arcade game. Have you played it? Have you played that game?
Oh, yeah. I maybe about 5 years ago, I went to Las Vegas for the first time. And it's so funny because people go to Vegas to, like, throw down and have a good time. They want to gamble, the debauchery. You know where I went, Kevin? I went to the Arcade Hall of Fame. And I played the X-Men arcade game. And
hell,
I played,
yes,
a bunch of old pinball, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Like, I went hard. I mean, I'm like an 80s kid. You know, like Taylor and I are doing this What Did I Miss podcast. We're going back to all this fun, campy 80s fantasy. But I was a teenager in the early 90s. So that was like prime time for me, that like I had a bicycle, a pocket full of quarters and nothing but time to burn, you know, and arcade was like the best place to spend the afternoon. Infamously, like me, my best friend, his older brother and his best friend, we rode like 3 miles across two towns with $10 each to just play and defeat the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade console. We were there for like 6 hours, Kevin. So I love that old X-Men arcade game. I know it's evoking some of like the Genesis games as well. My particular poison as a Super Nintendo kid, I had Spider-Man and the X-Men was like the early 92s game. So I love all this stuff, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in a similar like core child memory. My family and I would occasionally drive from New York when I was a kid. We'd go from New York down to Florida to visit family. And I remember on the way, we would stop at a particular rest stop area. And they had two arcade games. They had the Avengers and then they had the X-Men right next to it. And I remember doing the same thing, just playing those while we're waiting and using my quarters. Picking Cyclops, you know, like all the stuff I remember too, the specific sounds of Cyclops optic blasting, that Colossus like that he does to like shatter things. What's crazy is that I've actually played this game pretty often as an adult. Like, yeah, I attended the 8-bit and 1-Up and play, you know, Player One over in California, but also one of my good friends and huge X-Men expert, you can find him online, Brett White. He writes for Decider.
Oh, sure.
He does a ton of content. An old friend of mine during the pandemic bought the arcade game because he needed joy in his life, and he's just like, I'm gonna blow my money on something and it's gonna be goddamn this because I am sad and miserable and I need something in my life. So he has that, and since the things have opened up, I have gone to, you know, his place for parties and we've just played the X-Men arcade game at his place. And it's incredible. Like, it's just still so fun. It was based off of the Pride of the X-Men at the time, you know, the cartoon had come out. So they clearly had pulled a little bit from there. It's just such a blast. And seeing this episode to harken back to not just that game, but also the childhood of the 90s arcade life, which is so very Jubilee, was really, really fun for this particular strange two-part in one-part episode, but like very entertaining.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that because structurally, this is something we never did in the original series, right? I mean, I talked about it off the top, but just looking at the episode ordering, I saw two titles and just assumed two episodes, right? And I thought they might be a little bit trimmed. Like, I could certainly imagine before we got there that Motendo might not be the robust episode that we might desire. But I figured maybe we get like a 21-minute runtime there and then Life, Death, Part 1. So I was really surprised by this split. And I saw just in the feedback from the Screen and Page Discord, which you guys should come join and find. It's been a really like fun conversation in there just the last couple of weeks already. People are trickling in every day. Screen Page Pod are all of our socials. You'll find a Linktree link on any of those socials, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. That'll lead you into the Discord. You should come hang out. But a friend of the podcast, an incredible animator, Sean Yanell, who has done some actually awesome pixel work. You guys should find him. I think he's Super Pixel Boy on TikTok. He made an intro for the modern Excalibur series that occurred like during that Krakoa run that I've been talking about. And this is a team that overlaps a lot of our 97 X-Men. You have Gambit, you have Rogue, you have Jubilee. And Sean had like animated an intro to a video game that never was. And Sean was commenting after the episode how he's both incredibly impressed and a little bit infuriated that they're so effectively able to get so much story into one 20-minute episode, 25-minute episode. And then the flip side of that, a friend of the podcast, Josiah, diehard X-Men expert, was like, gosh, this felt a little rushed. Like, I wish there would have been a little bit more on both halves. So I just wanted to, like, off the top, ask you how this worked, because it's not something that they did with the old series of, like, splitting their runtime in half in this way.
No, absolutely. It is different. And I think where the weirdness is for me is the fact that it was split down the middle. Mm-hmm. Like one episode, like one part of the episode ended, then you go into the next story. I think what would have been a little more effective, but I could see why they hesitate, is doing it more interlaced. We're cutting back between the Jubilee and Roberto story and then the Storm and Forge story. And that is very X-Men-like. It is very X-Men-like, especially in the Claremont era, to do these, you know, the idea of the A-plot and the B-plot, and then eventually the A-plot ends and the B-plot becomes the A-plot and there's a C-plot going on. You know, that was something that was perfected during the time. I believe actually Paul Levitz was the, gosh, it's hard to say the originator, but like a specific structural type. I there's a whole book about it. But he is a, you know, famous comic book writer. He did Legion of Superheroes, but that's where it almost stems from, is Legion of Superheroes style. But Claremont clearly had a lot of that. So I think that would have been an interesting way to do it. And we saw, I think, a bit of that in the old series, these threading of plots that were like, seemed to be the small little plot lines to become huge plot lines later on. So I feel like they should have maybe leaned a little more into that structure versus, you know, which does happen in comics. You'll have one story, two stories, one issue, you know. So yep. It played with, I think, a familiar comic book style. I think I and probably a lot of modern viewers prefer the interlaced storyline version. So that's where, you know, that's where I kind of landed here on this. I think it would have played and read a bit differently if it was a little more interlaced. But it did feel, well, like one and a half stories, right? Because we only got half of Life, Death, because that is a story from the comics.
And notably, I think Life, Death, part of like the impact it had there is we all of a sudden like just pulled completely away from the main X-Men team and zoomed in on Storm for a couple of issues, right? Like it did just hone in on her. We weren't doing that interlacing. I don't want to misspeak, but across some of these podcasts, you'd mentioned of the Fox X-Men films, First Class is your favorite one. I think for me, it's Days of Future Past because of exactly what you're talking about. It really like captures that, oh yes, this is the full X-Men team. Like, like there's the team on the field dealing with the stuff in the past and the team in the future. And like, it was such a great way to like kind of merge the awesome casting of both sides of that whole franchise. But I see entirely what you mean. Like, I came away from this episode feeling that a little bit. I also had the thought that, just again, not to like undervalue how magnificent Motendo was, because I was like unambiguously the most excited for this episode of all the titles, because it felt so out there conceptually. Yep. Like, you had an idea of where they would go, and I was really eager to see what it was. I think if that maybe got a little less time than Life Death, that probably would have felt appropriate in retrospect too. But I think your point really stands, that like interlacing it like a more traditional contemporary television episode would have felt more organic than this, because they both felt like, oh, shorter stories. But I think especially Life Death, one that has such kind of weight and impact coming away from that second half, it was a little bit jarring for me. That's my first probably like real criticism of the show so far. That said, this was a very fun week. I mean, that whole first half of Motendo, Kevin, like, it's just such a madcap romp. It's evoking so much of the fun, like, iconography from the video games that we're talking about. The fact that they go like full pixel art is wild, but all the other homages there of like the Matrix dial tone and even like the phone teleport into a future Jubilee.
The Tron-ness of it all.
Yeah, tremendous. The Days of Future Past poster, literally from like the cover. I mean, there was just so much to love about that half of this episode.
Yeah, there was a real big like inside joke, referential meta comment, like not commentary, but meta thing to this episode. And I think that makes sense for when you're playing with Mojo, right? And the Mojoverse, like, that fits into this whole weird motif. So it was a great opportunity to do that. You know, the original series had a Mojo. Well, it had a couple, but like one Mojo episode where they pulled that into the TV shows that he references in this kind of. And so that was very, very fun to see that get thrown back in there. And like, what a weird ass villain Mojo is, right?
He's
like,
so strange, dude.
Such a strange villain. But like, also a villain like so of that the times, right? Like, I think there's a lot of characters that speak to, this is an era of comics and like culture. I think Mojo hits it, and obviously Jubilee does. Jubilee is the most, like, one of the most, like, ah, yes, you are of a particular time period character. So the pair all of that up in here in this episode, I think, was a very clever and well done choice.
Yeah, you're really spot on. They just so fully embody that energy of the 90s. That whole little sequence, they're like referencing Who's the Boss, A Different World, and then the People's Court with the Summers versus Gray divorce. It's all like very interesting the way they do it, but you're spot on in the way that it's so 90s. I think part of what I really love about Mojo, because he's just like a meme of a villain in a very real way, right? He's literally like reality TV guy. And in the 90s, reality TV was like, you know, in its like amoeba, like protoplasmic state, where it was pretty much just like the real world, Road Rules was starting to happen. So I feel this is like, to your point, where he's so of that era, but he also like grows into contemporary times and like the glut of reality television that has drowned us, the influencer age of like YouTube stars and insta clicks and all of it. Kevin, he's so like fits into the zeitgeist of today while still like fully embodying that 90s energy in a big way.
Absolutely. And it's just like really fun to like see that brought to life. Like, this type of like silliness and goofiness is also like very X-Men, right? Like, Mojo is very X-Men. Arcade, a different character who likes to put them into games, also very X-Men. It's so funny because I mentioned last week, my wife saw part of it and was just like, this show is so dramatic. And she did not see this episode. And I'm like, ah, you missed the one where they're sucked into a video game. So it's just very funny to see that like contrast. And you can even see it here, right? There's a lot of drama in the Life Death portion compared to the Mojo portion. But like, the Mojo portion hits so much fun stuff. And like the idea of like the video game references, the extra life, the like flashing colors because you're about to die, that's all spot on. And it shows like a love and reference, a reverence for that time period, which is what this is. I mean, you're doing X-Men 97, so you should lean into a lot of this because you're trying to appeal to the people who like loved it at the time. And I think it works. There's also, not for nothing, there's a huge like shift with Gen Z for a lot of this like retro technology and content. So I do think it also appeals to that group in a lot of really fun ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the more you start to pay attention to like the 30-year cycle of media and like people aging up and getting that feedback loop, like the stuff that I grew up with in the 80s and 90s, the wonder years and the happy days all make a lot more sense in retrospect, right? But we're there. We're at that point of like, you know, 10 years ago, it was the celebration of the kind of 80s with the birth of Stranger Things, and we're really transitioning into that 90s remembrance, like celebration space in a big way. We've been talking about the romances and our mileage as far as it varies on that. But I really love this Roberto Da Costa Jubilee thing, Kevin. Like, it sells me. Roberto, again, is like not the most prominent of the X-Men from the comics, but the way that we're exploring his kind of fear to manifest his powers, this responsibility of his parents, the judgment he doesn't kind of want to be seen, and then just the affection between the two of them. Like, they do feel really like youthful and authentic in that way. Like, I'm very much buying this whole energy, and I love like where we get in the culmination of these two's like budding relationship, as it were.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, there's a lot with Jubilee in the comics and like flirtations and things like that. She doesn't have, off the top of my head, major romances. The one I remember the most is her and Robin making out in the Marvel DC crossover series, and then they fused into one person for Dark Claw when it was Wolverine and Batman. So like that stuff was very funny to me. But this does feel like very true to the characters being presented with, right? And like how they're approaching them. And I do agree with you. I really like the Costa storyline, right? It is, to me, touching on some of those things we talked about that makes X-Men so appealing to people who can connect to the representation, right? The mm-hmm. idea of being like a group who's like persecuted against or seen as other. And certainly his fear of coming out, of like showing himself to his mom about how that could ruin their relationship as it's a broader community and affect their like family, feels very close to like coming out. And I think that so much of those themes are represented here, and what makes these stories like really powerful, all entrenched also in this like budding romance as he is, you know, like having these feelings for Jubilee, who is out and like, you know, is an X-Men. Like, there's just so many things that they can play with and go with here that hit true to, I think, the characters, but also like the themes of the show and like relatable experiences for especially teenagers. Anyone who's saying also or is just like, man, they're moving quick is like, also they're teens. You move fast when you're a teenager. Like that's just, your life is but a blink by that point. So like you're moving as fast as you can go. You have hormones. They're just running wild. You need to address them.
They're cohabitating, which just like accelerates the whole like rate of progression. Let me tell you, as somebody that spent some time in a boarding school, you know, like, there is a very real like concentration of energy that happens in that kind of high pressure environment. You know, I'm with you 100%. I mean, the allegory is so powerful. The reality is like, you know, we're talking about this, but the X-Men animated series is like the quintessential Saturday morning cartoon, right? And especially the Saturday morning cartoons of that era, they were not subtle in the message of the week every week, right? No, the ones that I grew up on, certainly in the 80s, like you'd literally have He-Man at the end of the episode, like, remember, kids, you know, like Mr. T, like, you know, listen to your mama, you know? And
G.I. Joe, knowing is half the battle.
Precisely. And so I think that we've talked about it across these episodes, especially in that first two episode delivery, the second of those two, but they're attacking a very powerful kind of idea in this very silly half of this episode, Motendo, that they get at a little bit, and I think really like subtle kind of nuanced ways in terms of like, look, I'm a guy who struggled a lot with like mental health issues over my life, Kevin. I love me a video game, and it can be the easiest place in the world to escape and hide from the encroaching dread that is reality, right? It's very, very easy to just disappear into that controlled environment. I mean, we're obviously looking at these themes of like moving away from the past. It's part of like growth, right? What is growth if not evolution? And you have to like leave the past behind you and embrace the future, take risks in the way that kind of Jubilee is encouraged to by Roberto at the end. But that we're talking about this vehicle of video games as a place that we can hide in a completely controlled environment that's predictable, where we don't have to worry about these frightening unknowns and unquantifiable measures. All I have to do is memorize the pattern, Kevin, and I too can defeat the master of magmatism. If I put my mind to it, I can succeed here where the world tries to like thwart me and hold me back with its unexpected events. And I just thought that was really like poignant as something that I have like examined internally a lot, my relationship with video games, when it's healthy escape, when it's an unhealthy escape, how I use it to like cope with my like refusal to move forward. All of that stuff hit me like a cement truck, for whatever it's worth, you know?
My God, I think you just broke me in a lot of ways, because as you're talking about like what you like about video games and what video games you respond to, you just like, I just had like a therapeutic moment, because yeah. I realized like I have an aversion to massively open world games. I just don't like them. I've never mm-hmm. been a fan of like the Bethesda style, especially like Fallout just isn't my jam. Like Skyrim is hard for me to get into. And I realize as you're saying this is because like I just feel like my normal life is full of too many choices, too many yep. decisions, too many directions. And I just kind of want to escape myself into a world where there's a story and I can follow it and I can feel like, I'm not saying like I just need something on the rails, but something that can direct me and not just be like, well, anything is your choice. I'm like, I don't want that. I'm leaving the modern world because it's just too much choice and weight on me. And I want to go into a video game where I can just go down a line. Like a Mass Effect is balanced to me open world, where I'm just like, I can just beat Commander Shepard and I can make some choices, but it's not just everything is like choose and pick and go and like you have to get all of it done. I think you just opened up something to me, and now I'm just like, oh God, oh no. Like you just
I was raised by a single parent psychotherapist and grew up on the DSM-3R, so I've got issues with self-diagnosis. I found it really poignant, you know, like because we're not as overt in X-Men 97 of like the message of the week, kids, remember, yeah. you know, but I thought it was really powerful in the end. That whole thing of like life is a risk is kind of like what she's saying at the end. It's all a giant risk, and like, my God, but isn't that true, right? It's so like cliche, but you're going to miss every shot you don't take. You're your own hardest critic. Like you have to try to succeed. You have to fail when you try. This is part of how we learn and how we grow. And that is scary, right? It's yeah. really easy to want to stay within a status quo where we have control. And I think what, especially when you're like talking directly to an audience of people that like the canon of comics, for as much as like we could joke that it's 60 years of like muddled, retconned, overlaid, like it's confusing and complicated, but it's quantifiable. Like you could know it all if you decided to know it all, you could. And in that way, I think that it acts as this kind of like panacea to existing in an unknowable universe, you know, in like a really powerful way. So I love that. And the fact that like both halves of the episode are echoing this thematic idea of like there comes a point where you have to be okay, no matter how much you loved existing in that moment. That moment has passed and a new one will come, and it's going to be frightening because we don't know what it's going to look like and we don't know how it's going to make us feel, but we have to like reach for it with boldness or we're just going to be like paralyzed in this indecisiveness in our lives, you know?
Yeah. And like, I love that idea, right? The thematicness of having to move past these moments and like, in order to grow, that's like, Jubilee is turning 18 in this episode, right? Like,
yeah.
It's a big moment of becoming an adult. And what does becoming an adult mean? And like, you exactly like you're saying, like, you, of course, you want to be stuck as a kid forever. You and I both have talked about our mutual Peter Pan complexes. But like, that's the thing, right? Like this idea of like, sometimes you're going to have to grow up. And for the X-Men, that's a huge part of it. And like with Storm, it shows that like that idea of like growing never stops. Like you're always going to have to keep evolving and keep growing. And like for a show like the X-Men, of course, evolution is a huge deal. So I think that's like all really appropriate for this episode and why they combine these stories. So it tracks and makes sense, obviously. But there is that like big split where you're just kind of like, oh, snap, we're at Storm and Forge now. Okay, that's
interesting. Yeah.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They're also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
To the story before I turn it off, I mean, a lot of fun bits with the Motendo, like Spiral being tech support with the six arms, like very good. Some of the callbacks, you know. But as we shift over to the Storm and Forge side of it, to Life Death, this is really heavy, you know. We've been talking about the music, but they had that like Storm theme, I guess. Mm-hmm. Storm's motif kind of playing low through the entry. Gil Birmingham voicing Forge, like, I love it. Kevin, I'm so like happy with these two. It's so kind of, it feels contrived, that it feels dramatic in that way of soap opera, as they're sitting at the table and he's talking about the bison. It's a leader cut, leaves room for all the spices. But it was really on point, man. I really like kind of love the setup there and the homage to just the visuals of this book. Because notably, it's got a bunch of like just silent panels and like this really powerful kind of transitional imagery of Storm. Like wardrobe as she's like shifting into the state of no power. I really like stopping in at Forge's little ranch out on the plains here and like getting this exploration of the beginning of their relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting to see the formation of that, you know, the deepening of it. As Storm is going through all this idea of being out in the open in the wilderness and the transition that is happening, like, when we started off, she already had the haircut. But if I'm not mistaken, like, this is the era where she gets the haircut because she lost her power. So, like, I'm also just waiting around. I'm just like, is she going to show up in leather? Is she going to show up in, like, a full leather jacket and, like, black leather outfit? Like, is that happening? So, like, and it might. It very well might. They're clearly also, I think, playing with some stuff that I think is a really interesting approach to it, you know? The revelation here that Forge was responsible for the technology that essentially birthed the mutant power restricting collars that we saw on Genosha. You know, like, he was responsible for that. In the comic, Forge is straight just responsible for the machine that that causes her to lose her powers.
And it's a big deal. I mean, it's something still that like 30 years later we revisit, like, continuously, right? The thing that like Forge built this gun once, you know.
Yep. And it caused a lot of chaos. And I think that they shifted it in a way that I think makes a lot of sense, because like it sometimes it's hard to convey in circle squares of just like, well, why would he have done that? And this, I think, does a good job of it, of him coming out of the war. He's angry and he started technology, but he didn't just build the specific thing. But because of one mistake and one thing he did, it led to like a domino effect. And it shows like how our decisions can have consequences, right? The ripple of one thing leading to another that you wouldn't have expected and seen how it would have turned out. So I do like that change actually quite a bit. I also like the reference. We saw X Factor, which I thought was very cool in the photo. Cool. So that was dope. Those are like the little things that the show continues to do that's very fun. Because like that is, one, a reference to the comics, but also a sharp reference to the X Factor episode that happened in the show, which was very, very fun when they did that.
They're hiding a ton of stuff in the background, right? Because there's another little picture there that shows him with, oh my God, I'm forgetting the name of the doctor from Muir Island.
Who is Apocalypse. Yep.
Yeah, that Mystique was like masquerading Adler. As it. Yes. And then there's like another Vision. Bastion is in that picture, but like the other picture is laid over.
Interesting. So really, I didn't see Bastion in there. That's cool.
Because it's like he's hidden. He's really obfuscated in there. There's all these great little references of like his pancake recipe on that bulletin board, which he made for her in the actual comics. You know, it's a bit of a transition, like in the comics they're in his crazy high-tech penthouse, but I think to your point in like some of the changes here, it's more effective for this delivery mechanism. Like if we're only going to get a kind of 14 minute intro to them, I think that it ends up like a little bit better that we're in these lower technology environment, and we could talk about his like technopathy applying to like how good he makes his chili is really interesting. I always really like Forge as a mutant because he's got all this like potential for trouble, Kevin, and he's not the most like ethically even keeled, right? He's got like peaks and valleys along the way where he's motivated by a lot of different impulses and ends up being really compelling. So I don't know. I think that some of the criticisms I saw were that we're going to get this delivery where he will ultimately say, I love you. And she slaps him in the face. And that felt like rushed. I saw a couple of people saying, Josiah notably, and a few others. Did it land for you, I guess? Like, how does that play? Because we've spent a good deal of time talking about, like, the Wolverine Jean Cyclops dynamic and that, like, that not landing necessarily for us as adults of it. Like, dude, it's a little weird. You're like, you're being weird. And it kind of struck me the same way with Forge of like, buddy, this is a little weird. Like you're going a little bit too far, my friend.
Yeah. I mean, it's really tough. And like people experience emotions differently. I'm a little more withdrawn as a person. Shocker of shocks, I know. So like saying I love you that quick feels very fast. That said, there are some people who do that. And we do, you know, look at those people like, too fast, bro, too fast. And I do think it came a little quick. I think her anger about it is justified. Because, again, he is responsible for some bad stuff. So slapping him, I am okay with. But yeah, the drop of I love you is just so quick. And it's really tough. But like, man, like that could just also be a generational thing. I'm not saying because they're older, but quite possibly because younger people maybe use that word more loosely than our generation. Because like, for us, expressing those type of feelings are harder, and we're told to like withdraw them and like only express those things after a long time in the right moment. And even if you're kind of feeling deeply for this person, you can't say love. Like that's just too strong. But the people of younger generations, they express themselves very openly, very quickly, and very like authentically in that way. So I don't know. Like, I think for us, maybe, right? Like, I think for us, the older viewers, it feels very quick. But for a younger viewer, it's just like, if he's feeling it, he's feeling it. You know? Like, so, like that's the part that I'm struggling with, I think, between this. Because I want to agree that it feels fast. But at the same time, for some young people, that might check out. That might just be real, you know?
It's really fair. I think that my very like paper thin defense is like, it's similar to like the Wolverine thing where like love can be unreciprocated, right? And we can build up these delusional portraits of people in our minds, right? Like you could turn somebody into something he's not, especially this whole theme. Like, you know, Forge is like helping to rebuild Storm's confidence in a way. Part of like what he's doing, I think, is really awesome, where he's like, you're more than your powers. You're a goddess, not because you could fly on the wind and you could call down the lightning, but because you are Aurora Monroe. Like, look at you. You're incredible. You're magnificent. You're a leader. You're powerful. You're charismatic without any of the X gene connected to that. And so I think there is this pedestal thing happening, which is a very kind of traditional male thing to do sometimes, to like put their love up on this like unreachable height. And I think that it does, at the very least, it really sets up the slap well. Like, as we're dealing again with this kind of compressed format of storytelling, like if we have to dehydrate life death a little bit, this mostly worked for me. You know, the delivery doesn't land as like an authentic proclamation of love between two people that may in fact be falling for one another, but it does read as like the desperate plea of a man who's trying to make right on a catastrophic mistake, as like an appeal to her, and her visceral reaction like lands right as she just like gives him the smack across the face and storms out. But this gets us into this weird space where now she's gonna go like charging across the plains. She ends up like tumbling off this cliff, and then she falls right back down into the house, Kevin, only to be attacked by strange demons that looked like an owlbear, which we love an owlbear.
Yes.
Right?
Love an owlbear.
Which notably, this demon is being voiced by the same voice actor who is doing Storm. I thought that was like a very interesting touch as I was looking over the episode. But so what's your take on what's going on here? Because we've read the book and we're obviously changing some elements of that story, but I think we can like call on what we know from a lot of it to guess what might be going on here.
Yeah, that's going to be really, really interesting, because the character, I believe, introduces themselves as the adversary, which
is the
character from the comic. It leads to a lot of interesting stuff and a lot of questions for me. For example, are we doing Fall of the Mutants? Like, are we going there? Is that what's happening? Like, so there's a lot of things. But at the same time, they did Inferno, and they did that in one episode. So they could possibly do Fall of the Mutants in 1.5 episodes, right? Like, we could keep blitzing through this, who knows? But like, I think they're leading to a lot of that. Like, we have this Storm storyline that's going on. We're having the X-Men have their own storyline. I think it's going to bring the two together eventually, obviously, for probably combating the adversary is my guess. But like, how that all shakes out, I'm not sure. And like, what it's going to leave us with, I'm not 100% sure either. There's just a lot of ways that this could go, because it's adapting stuff, right? Like, I think the Inferno thing showed how cleanly they can like tie the threads to not have it as loose as the past was. And I think that's probably a good call to do here. But yeah, I'm very interested about how it all shakes out and what threads they do pull on and what other ones they like kind of loop into other pieces.
Yeah, you're not alone there. I mean, next week is not Life Death Part 2, notably. Like, I kind of love the way that we're setting these things up and then moving away from them for a bit. Like, it's a real throwaway in the beginning as everybody's having breakfast. Poor Remy LeBeau, by the way. I'm really feeling for my man Gambit at this point.
But
as they're all sitting at breakfast, they're like, oh, Jean and Cyclops are over at the United Nations. Like, it feels like that's a bit of what we're going to be dealing with next week. But nonetheless, like, I really dig the way that we're kind of investing in these very focused stories, Kevin. Like, we really only dealt with three people on our team this week and a Forge, right? A couple of like great cameos through the Pixel stuff. But it makes me excited for the way that we may be able to focus in going forward and seeing the name of some of these episodes. Like, we're going to deal with some heavy stuff along the way.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And it's been really great so far. Again, my biggest thing right now is this like 10 episodes. I want more. Like, you know, please, sir, I want some more. Because I'm enjoying it so much, because it does give me. I mean, we talked about this at the beginning. We haven't had the X-Men in so, so very long. It's been so long, especially like good X-Men. It's been a very long time.
Yeah.
And I'm happy getting good X-Men again, and I want it to be around longer because just we haven't had it in a very long time. It's like an addict being given their fix, I guess. And I know that's a bad analogy because that's a bad thing. But for me, I'm just like, I need it. I want more. Give me.
We already talked about our relationships with video games. It's fine. I'm with you, right? I don't want to like yuck anybody's yum for people who love some of the more contemporary stuff. But for me, like, you know, the X-Men films, like I was so hyped about them in my early 20s. Just the fact that it was like happening despite the black leather and the Cyclops shelving and all of it, I could like really get on board. And I had a couple of like transcendent experiences in the movie theater watching that original trilogy. First Class, I do not love nearly as much as you, mostly because like they mishandle a couple of characters that I really love. Like you can't bungle Emma Frost and Sebastian that badly. They deserved better. Like, come on, you had Kevin Bacon. But then we get to like Days of Future Past, and that to me was like, oh my gosh, we might be riding the ship. This movie was actually really good. It's a great bridge between old cast, new cast. Like, come on, we got all the Magnetos and Xaviers. And amongst all the criticisms of those films, it is not the casting, right? There are a couple of misfires, like that poor kid who played Colossus and said three lines across five films, RIP to him. But, you know, there's a lot of tremendous casting right there that we're still like hanging our hats on to this day, 25 years later. So coming away, everything that happened since Days of Future Past cinematically has been like me slowly withdrawing from the fandom and being like, I don't want to know. I can't celebrate this. Like, it hurts me that this New Mutants movie is being released. I'm in pain about this Dark Phoenix interpretation. What have you guys done, man? Like, how do you drop the ball this bad? So I don't want to overstate it, but just for it to be this exceptional, literally, Kevin, as we're sitting here recording, your frenemy, your nemesis from the House of W, Josh Wigler himself, messaged me to say, I just watched Motendo. This is extraordinary. This is so effing good. Like, it's really good. And it's easy to like just continue to overstate that. But at this time in the world where there's a lot to be stressed out about when we're outside of our controlled video game environments, it just feels good to have something this like simple and joyful to celebrate every week, you know?
Absolutely. And like, we'll enjoy it as long as we're getting it for right now. I mean, it did really well. I have to imagine we'll ideally get more X-Men into the future. I obviously am hoping like they, you know, do more episodes per season, but it's really hard to tell with the streaming style. So I'm just going to be thankful for the more that we get coming out of this. And the show clearly loves this stuff. They love the X-Men. They love the references. They love the comics. They're pulling on so many fun things. I mean, and subtle things we talked about, like you, Bastion's mentioned, you know, like the reference to Adler, the X-Factor of it all. Mm-hmm. Something else that I didn't catch, but I saw someone call it out online, and it's brilliant. In this episode, in the intro, Jean Grey has a ponytail because in the previous episodes, that wasn't Jean. Jean had the flowing, like, no ponytail hair in episodes 1 to 3, but in the intro for episode 4, she's in a ponytail because now we have the real Jean.
That's so,
like,
cool.
That's just so, yeah, exactly. That's so cool. And I think that's really where we are for this series. And, like, even this episode, right, with the Motendo, as weird as it is, that's so cool, I think, is the response that this show is getting and is well deserved to have, because like the X-Men are cool and I'm glad we're getting cool stuff about it.
Yeah, to the attention to detail, like it really is exceptional, right? I didn't catch the Jean bit, but Bishop has been removed from the opening credits because he's gone. He's back in the future, baby. You know, Jubilee doing the previously on. There's such nice touches. Even the thing where we're gonna meet future Jubilee. We didn't talk about her much. I love the like, what's up, Hot Topic Stalker?
Was like,
it's such a good line. But so future Jubilee's name, or digital Jubilee's name, I'm sorry, is Abscissa, which is a mathematical term that denotes the center point of an x-axis, Kevin. Like, the details are so on point. Are a bunch of like smarter and more comprehensive people than me that do the Easter egg deep dives on YouTube. I really recommend Ryan Airy and Screen Crush. Heavy Spoilers is another good one. They do some really great analysis of these. But he was talking about how that idea of like the middle of the x-axis, what is it, the middle of the X? It's a crossroads, right? And they're both at these crossroads of life. Like, it's really great metaphor, man. man. The allegory is powerful. They're nailing like the Saturday morning messaging for the 21st century that I think needs to be like potent and fierce and fervent in certain ways, but they're doing it in like very subtle adult ways. And I just am really impressed at how good this show is. I'm easily hyperbolic, Kevin, and often hyperbolic, but this really is like an extraordinary little series of TV. And just for me personally, as we're in this kind of transition point while we're launching Screen and Page and our alma mater post-show recaps has kind of closed its doors, that's been like an emotional time in my life. And getting to hang out with you weekly to recap a television show that is both this nostalgic, this exciting, and actually just this good is like, I cannot overstate how valuable it is to me in my life at this point. So thank you for joining me again this week, my friend.
I mean, always, right? Like, and especially to talk about the X-Men. I mean, like, I'm so hyped again for these characters. Like, I'm with you about the movies, though, but there are some good stuff. Like, I remember sitting in the theater when the first X-Men came out shortly after Spider-Man. And I enjoyed Spider-Man quite a bit. Like, don't get me wrong, I loved the Spider-Man movie. It was it's a huge moment, I think, for comic book films, that first Sam Raimi Spider-Man. And I remember watching it. But like, I at the time wasn't like the biggest Spider-Man fan. I liked Spider-Man fine. That's changed relatively recently. I have a whole thing on you know, PSR when Josh and I were talking about how my love of Spider-Man has increased dramatically over the last couple of years. But the X-Men were my thing. And I remember sitting in the theater, and I will never forget the moment that, Sabretooth, Wolverine flies out of a car, Sabretooth throws Wolverine on top of the hood, and then the snow starts going, and then they shift the angle, and you see Cyclops and Storm standing behind Sabretooth. And I felt chills, because it was a moment for me to be like, oh my God, like the X-Men are on screen. And I remember that. And so I recently rewatched X2 because I was so excited. Because like, for the longest time, X2 was my favorite, right? Like, it was my favorite comic book movie. It was so good. And spoiler, still extremely good. Cyclops shoving aside, still extremely good. And, you know, I can talk all day long about the first class of it all, but I also love Days of Future Past. I was about to rewatch Days of Future Past because next to First Class now, that is up there for me. Because, like, I think it's so hard. I just think First Class is, like, as a film structured phenomenally well. As a comic book X-Men thing, Days of Future Past, I think, takes it because it just has so much from the comics and what it does and the things it pulls from and like seeing all the cast together. But that's where it stops, right? Like, I'm not going to continue on from there.
Nope, that is where it stops.
Yeah, as this stuff ends, I'm so excited to be talking about it. I'm so thrilled to like have this per week, and like I want to now fill my space with more X content, which I hope everyone else does too. I hope people go back if they haven't watched the movies, watch X-Men 1, X-Men 2, skip X-Men 3, go into, you know, First Class, go into Days of Future Past and stop, watch X-Men Evolution, you know, like there's so many places you can go here and things to experience, and hopefully that'll catch everyone up until the second season of this comes out.
No joke. I mean, we got some fun stuff coming. I think the timing,
absolutely,
knowing that we have Deadpool 3 coming in a couple of months too, like that could not be more perfectly timed. As Ryan Reynolds is literally out there recording commercials, calling himself MCU Jesus. Like, it feels like this is a real like Palm Sunday moment before we get to Deadpool 3 of Easter, you know? So I'm very excited about all the X content. I found myself this morning wondering like what the numbers look like on sites that have like old video game ROMs for like the old 92 video games. Like, there was a spike today of people going and looking for those old Genesis X-Men games, that arcade game. I certainly wanted to play it when I got up this morning. So yeah, it's been very fun. We'll be back next week talking about it. Between now and then, Kevin, I got some fun stuff planned. I got the one and only Todd the Librarian, X-Men aficionado, will be joining me later on this week. So you can expect that podcast to be dropping this weekend. We're just going to be talking through this episode again and the whole series up until now. Todd over at the Whirlwind Podcast doing an awesome little cartoon recap with another friend of mine who will be showing up later along in the season. But I'm really excited to talk to Todd. Next week, my partner in crime from the Dark Rewatch Podcast. Most recently, we recapped Masters of Air over post-show recaps. The one and only Ariel will be joining me next week. So I think both of those podcasts will drop before folks hear from you and I again next week. But I'm just so excited. It's been so much fun hearing all of the positive feedback from the fans. Usually when one of these things drops, a big genre piece, especially anything like comic book MCU adjacent these days, there's not so much consensus in the response from the audience, and people are just loving this. So it's really fun wave to ride. Thank you for hanging out, Kevin. What do you got going on? Where can people find you before we are back next week?
Yeah, I mean, you can find me on Instagram, The Mahadman. I mean, I haven't really posted a lot these days. I need to get back onto that. But beyond that, you can definitely find me here each week. But you can also find me on Worldwind Podcast, where Melissa, Adam, and I are talking about Doctor Who. Our show from PSR has now regenerated into the TARDIS. We're continuing our coverage. We're in season 6 right now, which is a phenomenal, phenomenal season. We're heading into some really, really good stuff with some huge revelations that we're really excited to talk about. Is practically one of the big reasons why we wanted to do it, was to get to like these episodes coming up. So
cool.
And then shortly thereafter, some other ones following, but really, really pumped about it. So you can find me on those. But yeah, that's like the main places for now.
Cool. You can hit me up at DM Philly and all the places over Twitch TV if you want to catch it when I do stream some tabletop role-playing games. I'm going to do that again soon, I promise. YouTube channel DM Philly has VODs of me and Kevin playing a bunch of role-playing games together. We did an Avengers one-shot once upon a time. You kicked the crap out of
Ultron. I think
about
that game so much. I did. I think about that game so much because I was so happy with how that worked out at the end. I was just like, oh man, that was so cool.
I've been threatening to like design some D&D 5e X-Men characters. We'll have to see once we're at the end of X-Men 97. Maybe indeed. Screen, Page, Pod, those are all our socials. Go follow them over there. Track us down through the Discord. You can find the link tree on all the socials. Join us there. Hit us up. Really want your feedback. I'd love to know what you guys are thinking about everything out there. We will be back next week talking about the next episode of X-Men 97. But until then, just remember, second star to the left and straight on till morning.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.